Thanks to your generous donations to our Kickstarter funding campaign, Clive Barker Podcast presents Fundraiser 3.
Hell on Earth.
This is an audio commentary for Saint Sinner, if you didn't look at the title on the download here. The sci-fi movie.
Sci-fi channel
movie. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. And I'm watching the US DVD, and I think, Jose, you have the PAL European
one. I do. I might have to do a few pauses now and then because my movie is 1 hour, 22 minutes. And I think it's running 8 minutes shorter than you guys.
So there's just less footage in it, or?
No, it's the PAL is 25 frames per second and NTSC is 29.9 frames per second. And so that causes a certain effect of... PAL, I think, runs a little faster. It's strange. I can't explain
that.
That
is weird.
Okay, here's our sexy monk.
Yeah, he's eating a tomato and wearing a diaper.
Yeah.
that's a good opening.
I like the shot. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, they're setting him up to look like Jesus. He's cruciform lying on the grass.
Yeah, and here's our first shot of some boobs.
Yeah, so he's I think they're setting up the dichotomy, I guess, the saint sinner right here in this opening shot.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like he's into being a monk at all, really.
No. It seems kind of like he got dragged into it cuz that's what his brother did.
Uh-huh. So, I guess the monks are coming from farm work or something.
Yeah.
Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, that's the weird part of this is like I don't remember any there being any monasteries with monks in the United States at all, but
I guess Greg Serrano, I think he's our monk, right?
Yes.
Gina Rivera plays the detective. I found an interview with Mary Mara, actually. She plays one of the succubi. And William B. Davis. He's the X-Files chain-smoking man.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
There he is. I guess, you know, he's been around for a long time. Must be the alien DNA.
You're spoiling the X-Files for me.
So everybody is going to church. Kind of a childish way to sneak up behind someone.
I actually watched this last night and I actually kind of enjoyed it a good bit more than thought there was a lot more good than there was bad. So,
Jose, mm-hmm. I think yours has started quite a bit sooner than mine.
Okay, I'm seeing they're walking towards the repository.
Yeah, right now I'm seeing his brother praying, and he just snuck up on him.
Ooh, okay. I guess I'll pause mine, though. Let me know when they go down the stairs of the repository.
Okay. Yeah, Rob, are you about the same place as me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, they're going down the stairs from his room right now. Now they're going out, headed outside.
Yes.
And there's Jesus' statue. They're walking past it.
Yes. Like the lighting.
Okay, now they're going in down. No, oh no, they're still outside.
I thought the sets in this were really good. Did y'all think they were really good?
Yeah.
I thought they did a good job with the sets and the production value.
Okay, mm-hmm. Now they're going down. Now they just opened the door and now they're going down the stairs. Yeah.
I like the photography of this movie. It's pretty pleasant. There's a little monster in that thing there.
Yeah, everything's except for this scene here, but everything's kind of bright and colorful in this movie, which is a little different from what you would expect, I guess, with the subject matter.
Also on the wall there, there's going to show up what looks like a demon's skull on the wall.
Oh, yeah. I didn't notice that the last time.
For the candles?
In this room. Yeah, see, that's pretty cool. Looks like the Chazar cat.
Looks like Frank the Rabbit from Donnie Darko.
Yeah, that too.
We interrupt this movie to bring you Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time.
I was just thinking that too. My brother loves those books. I read the first one and I was like, I've read enough.
I wonder if this was made specifically for this movie or if it was a prop that they got.
From something else?
Something else, yeah.
I don't know. It is pretty fancy.
Here comes B. Davis.
Yeah. This monk guy seems uncharacteristically, forgiving, I guess, of the stuff that they do here in a few minutes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. He's like a discount Bob Hoskins.
Yeah,
yeah,
he does look that.
Yeah.
You know, I got to say, though, whoever put all these world-threatening items all in one place surrounded by monks wasn't very smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's putting that box on top of the table.
Well, and it's weird that this guy, he's from the Catholic Church, right? So presumably you'd think all this stuff would be at the Vatican, not at this monastery in the United States, right. In the Pacific Northwest.
To Brother Alcala, they made this monastery to protect this stuff.
Yeah.
You know what? He says something here that I think it's really weird. It's evil has a way of returning. And, you know, he says we thought about burying it or throwing it in the sea. I mean, have you actually tried that? Because how could it return?
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Because a fish would have grabbed the thing and gotten sucked in. And
Munkar and Nakir, old medieval teenage erotic drawings.
I really like those characters.
Yeah.
You know, Munkar and Nakir are actually part of Islamic eschatology.
Oh, they really?
They're two angels who wake the dead on the Day of Reckoning and ask them, who is God? Who is your prophet? And they're supposed to carry these huge hammers that nobody else can lift.
Hmm.
I think in this case, they just slap those names on a couple of generic...
Yeah, they did.
Succubi.
/succubi.
Yeah. Yeah.
The preacher, the guy, the actor, William Davis, he doesn't look like he's from this time. It's supposed to be 1800s. He looks like he's from the 1900s or something like that.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, he does.
Because of the lapels of his jacket, they look more modern.
Yeah, just,
yeah.
He looks like a modern priest.
Yeah.
He sticks out pretty bad.
We put this dangerous artifact on the table, and we gave our expository dialogue. It's time to leave the room.
I know.
So these guys can,
what were they doing there? Oh. They just went into the repository to just look at the box and then go back out. It's
well, he put it down because he was bringing it from the Catholic Church. But yeah, it doesn't seem like that's a good place for it. Just set it on a table. I don't know. And I don't understand what his brother does differently with this ball. So why isn't Akala getting his hand sucked in right now?
I guess because he's the weaker of the two, maybe. It's like, oh, I'm sticking my fingers in a cantaloupe.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't sell this very well. Is this against his will? I didn't understand.
You know what's funny is that I'm watching this with subtitles on. And in this part, when the ball is eating his arm, it says squelching.
Well, yeah, and this is weird. Why did it get severed up there where it wasn't biting him?
I think he pulled it back, where he pulled it back, the force, you know.
It's jerked his arm off. Silly.
I think that's a nice little effect, the transformation. That.
Yeah, CGI.
I thought when I first saw these two, I was like, okay, that's kind of weird. But, you know, the morph thing was cool.
Yeah.
Clive, actually, I was reading in the Fangoria, thought they looked too nice in these early scenes, so he demanded that as the movie go on, they get uglier and more.
Yeah. Well, and there's a deleted scene where they look more normal, where it's where they're trying to get him out of the police station.
Yeah.
And they weren't slimy or anything. They just looked like normal sort of punk rockers. And so Clive had them reshoot it and make them more slimy and stuff.
I don't think my DVD has any deleted scenes.
Yeah, this one, the American one, has deleted scenes, and it also has commentary by the director and Clive Barker on the whole movie and the deleted scenes.
Kind of jealous about that because my DVD didn't have any of that stuff. It's really just the movie.
I thought about watching that with the commentary, but I didn't want to end up parroting back all of Clive's commentary on the, you know, on our commentary. So
I wish we could read what's on the sign in the Wheel of Time there.
Yeah. There's Roman numerals in the middle.
Like the monk you were talking about.
Thomas,
earlier.
Go back to the monastery, but it's like, who's going to help that dude? He lost his arm.
Yeah.
Foul things.
Job of the monk.
Technically, I don't think demons and succubi are the same thing. And then he says something that I also think it's a little weird. He says, moving through time to a world that's ill prepared to face their evil. How does he know that? They could be going back or forwards in time, and the knowledge of who they are is pretty old and wouldn't be forgotten.
Yeah, there's some shortcuts in here. Like apparently he can read what time they went to on that Wheel of Time, and they can wave their arms around, or they can actually activate it and set it to go again. I mean, they don't really explain that either.
They went to the time when Biff is president of the United States.
Biff Trump.
Yeah. look at this scene here where they're walking. They look just like something out of a Universal Monster movie.
Well, they're still time traveling here. Now they're walking.
Okay.
Yeah. There was a lot of little foreshadowing that I think you'd have to pause it to really see all the little scenes that they included in their time travel.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is kind of goofy. It looks almost like a student film here, where they're walking down the sidewalk.
Yeah, and the passersby are going like, "Whoa!"
Yeah, got the beard.
Yeah, I don't know. Something about the way it's shot. It just doesn't seem. I don't know. It doesn't seem right.
It doesn't seem old. It seems like all this takes place like in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think they sell that very well. That this is the 1800s.
They try to.
I guess that has to do with the bad kind of lighting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely TV movie lighting.
I mean, gosh, I've seen so many much worse movies on Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
This was really starting when sci-fi was still spelled sci-fi instead of being what?
Oh, sci-fi
now.
Yeah, with the Y.
S-Y-F-Y.
Yeah,
that's weird.
I've understood that. This was released October 26th. It premiered October 26th, 2002.
Yeah, I didn't see it originally when it aired. I just got the DVD when the DVD came out.
I just saw bits and pieces of it, to be honest with you, and I finally just watched it really for the first time last night. So,
Clive said in an interview once that he had a deal over at Fox Television for a while and thought nothing came of that deal in terms of actual programming. And then they contacted Serafin and said, we'd like to be in the business of making movies of the week again. It turns out they made none of them for anyone. But what it did was cause Clive to create six stories for that venue. One of them was Saint Sinner, and it existed in this 25-page treatment. When they talked to Sci-Fi Channel, it turned out that they really did want to make movies, and Clive said, I've got this one I think is really cool.
I wonder why he chose to make this title the same as the comic book.
He said he just liked the title.
Yeah.
He likes the title of Saint Sinner.
I was thinking about that, and I was like, well, he did make a treatment for Marvel's Razor Line series for that Barker verse that they did in the 90s.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming, I don't know how things work exactly, but I think that maybe he couldn't use the same story for the Sci-Fi Channel because he already he already made that treatment for Marvel. Marvel bought the rights to that Saint Sinner story, right? So I'm wondering if that was the cause that made this movie have to go away from the story of the comic books.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, it's really not, because I think you can't copyright a title, right? I mean,
not entirely sure on that.
Yeah.
I know that, for example, this was developed first as a script with Doris Egan, and then Hans Rudianoff came in with Clive, and they worked on the script a little more, and they did 6 drafts in 3 weeks, they said in an interview. And funny thing is, I went to Doris Egan's website, and she had this movie listed on her website, but it's not. The comment she has there is not very flattering. She just says something like, Saint Sinner, please don't ask me about this one. Just don't ask.
Oh.
So I'm wondering what happened with Doris Egan. And it seems like she wasn't happy with the movie.
That gets revealed a lot of times.
This started out as an idea for a TV show, though. Clive was telling people in 2001... that we have Saint Sinner, which is a show I'm doing for the Sci-Fi Channel. It's not based on the comic. I just love that title. We'll probably start shooting that towards the end of this year.
I've never read the comic. Could either of you comment on what that storyline was in the comic book for the listeners? I'm curious myself.
Hey, they're playing Spin the Bottle with the Sphinx Nicodemus dagger. Well, I don't remember it that well anymore because it's a little complicated, but there is this guy... he's a young teenager, and he's very tormented because there's an angel and a demon trying to take over his soul. And so he kills his best friend and ends up throwing himself on a river, but he doesn't die. And he's taken in by a woman who nurses him back to life.
And
it gets a little more complicated. I think that comic book was made more for people who were into Sandman at the time.
Yeah.
I was trying to capitalize on that.
Yeah, it was cool. It was probably the best of the Razorline comics.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here we go.
And it was cut short sooner than the others.
Oh.
Gotta get back in time.
Yeah. Gonna go back in time.
Hey, we could add that as a title for this.
Yeah, gotta go back. And
it's like, hey, he's stuck in a rewinding movie.
Yeah.
There's really no explanation why they start out time traveling in that monastery, but then they end up in completely random locations in a city.
Yeah, but it's still driving distance away from the monastery.
Yeah.
Really strange.
Oh, yeah, there's the roller coaster.
Yeah, and Munkar and Nakir didn't seem to mind time traveling, but it made him barf.
Yeah. Affected his nervous system or something.
Yeah. But at least he could wear clothes, unlike in Terminator.
Yeah, true.
Actually, that was one thing that always bugged me about Terminator 2 is that the T-1000 didn't have any skin.
No, he was made of that...
liquid metal.
Liquid metal, yeah.
Yeah, but they said only organic material could go through... Just, I mean, but the T-1000 just looks like human skin. He doesn't actually have any.
That's a good point. It's one of those things that they hope people don't think too hard about.
Yeah.
It's like, what is that contraption this guy is riding? It's called a bike.
Yeah. They had bicycles in the 1800s.
It's hard to imagine that there was a time when there weren't any bikes.
Yeah, I think the bicycle, according to, I think H.G. Wells, the bicycle and the machine gun were invented around the same time.
Hmm. Well, I think the guy who decided to make the front wheel smaller was a really smart guy.
I never learned to ride a bike.
Really?
Yeah. Never learned.
Dude, he wants to take this guy to the hospital because he just bumped into him. And he throws away a completely good sandwich.
I know, yeah. He never eats. That's one of my notes, Jose. I was like, why did he throw away the hot dog or whatever?
He just bought it.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and Akala, when he went through time, he's got barf down the front of his shirt, and he's got these huge pit stains on his armpits.
Also, you would never give someone a ride who's playing with a knife.
Yeah. So in the there's a deleted a long deleted scene with this guy where they're kind of setting him up because they originally had planned for him to be the nice Christian person, and then they changed their minds and made it that police woman instead. So they cut this big long conversation with him short because they thought people would just assume that he's going to come back later, but he doesn't.
This scene is so weird. Are you seeing her put on that shirt as a dress?
Not yet, no. We're looking at the hallway right now.
Oh, okay. I guess I'm a little...
Yeah, now she's pulling stuff out of the wallet.
Yeah. This is a nice little icky scene.
Yeah.
Very Clive Barker.
Yep. Bugs.
Yeah.
Didn't take them long to find a victim.
No.
Another thing I liked about this is another that... The theme of Clive has with she's sucking the energy source out of this guy.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and they have those
what
weird...
What is that? What is she sucking? Is that like...
It's some kind of weird organic straw that they make like out of the same material that they do their cocoon.
Oh, okay.
The cocoon thing is really weird.
It is weird. That was the thing I liked the best about this is that stuff is so bizarre.
Yeah.
And they don't bother to explain it.
They only show it after it's created, but they never show how they create it.
Yeah.
No, I think it's well, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but there's a brief moment where they do kind of show how they create those things. It's they kind of create them with some kind of vomit out of their mouth.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, and here they're learning how to talk TV.
Yeah, like in Transformers. We talk TV.
Oh, man, I thought nobody was going to get that reference.
Oh, yeah, the Junkions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
I love that movie. It's way better than the new Transformers movies.
Oh, God, it is, isn't it?
Talking about the animation movie?
Yeah.
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 I love when was it? I think...
Unifron?
I was thinking of Starscream. There's something with Starscream, and somebody shakes their fist at him, which I thought was hilarious.
Oh, yeah. So these demons, I guess they call them succubi.
Yeah. And demons.
So they're... I guess that the pretty one is the one who seduces the victims, and then the other one is the one who kills them.
Yeah, and they both have weaknesses that don't take very long to exploit. Because she can't stop having sex with people, and then Munkar can't stop eating even after the guy is dead or whatever.
Don't drink the death blood.
Yeah, which is that was also in Interview with a Vampire, right? If you drink mm-hmm. blood from a stopped heart, then it could kill you.
Yeah, that's Anne Rice.
Yeah, but then they would also cut open a rat or something and drink the rat's blood. But that rat, that blood was obviously dead, so I don't know.
Oh, this movie is... the story just keeps on moving forward like a freight train. It's like, that guy gave him a ride, and he said, which way are you going? And he just spun the knife and said, that way?
And the guy's like, just cool, okay. Exactly, yeah.
Exactly to the same building where Munkar and Nakir are killing the other guy.
Yeah.
Now that's just crazy. Also, one of the things they do in this movie is they put these title cards with the time.
Yeah.
I don't think that's necessary. They could have just done like a fade dissolve to show that some time was passing, but
yeah.
They go down to the minute. I think that's amazing. It's like five.
And it doesn't
like 7:59.
Yeah, but there's no countdown or timer to when he has to get this done.
No, like importance to it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like, oh, the whole city's going to blow up if you don't do this.
Yeah.
I get
7:59 a.m.
In fact,
expecting them to show Jack Bauer, like, trying to save the president.
And honestly, because he's doing this in time, he could take his whole lifetime to catch them, and it wouldn't matter.
That's true, because when you time travel, you can just return back to the same moment you left off.
So.
Yeah. Okay, here's our detective.
7:59 a.m., not 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Oh, she's just taking a sip of her coffee cup. I'm going to pause it until you guys reach that point.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Now she's crying and looking at her cross because her dad died.
That's what I...
Man, your movie's really sped up.
I know. Sorry about that. It's the actual DVD, so it's not like some file I got off the internet.
So it's because you're playing a PAL DVD on a US system?
I think so. This may have some cuts as well. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
This guy right here.
She's walking with her.
Going through the motions though with his lines. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, you can tell he doesn't give a rip about this movie.
You know, he's collecting a paycheck.
Yeah.
I mean, after he read his death scene, I'm sure he was like, all right, I'll do it. But I'm not going to act too hard, darn it.
Yeah, I'm not going to act too hard. Yeah, pretty much. Perfect way to sum up his performance.
She's a good actress, but it seems to me like she's wearing a wig, and sometimes it's really obvious.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
She was in Showgirls. She was a friend of that main character. That
really?
Friend. Oh, okay. Cool. I thought she looked familiar.
So he's just now sitting down in the car.
Okay.
And now they just pulled up to the record store.
I see it. I think I'm synced up with you guys now.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if y'all remember a show on USA Network called Good versus Evil, G versus E.
No.
Well, that's the reason I thought this movie has that TV vibe look of those USA kind of TV movies. In
Yeah, he belongs. He should be in like a cop show, like yelling at the main protagonist.
Yeah, and he can't. Yeah, he can't do that with her just because her dad just died. So he just kind of like, oh, whatever, I guess. You can do whatever you want.
When they went into this room and they see that giant pile of bugs and that weird cocoon, he's like, well, that's something you don't see every day.
Yeah. Well, and it's weird. They're like, no, forensics says that this guy's only been dead for an hour. It's like, well, what do they say about the cocoon? What is that?
Right. It's not like it's a decomposed body. It's a freaking cocoon.
And I don't understand about the hallucinatory maggot or whatever. I mean, I guess that's not till later, but... I mean, why was it a hallucination?
Good point.
I think it was if I remember correctly, doesn't it have it was a reason to show that she had some kind of connection to all this? It proved to her that she had some kind of...
I think so, yeah.
Maybe you're right.
Yeah, it's like prostitutes? No, they're succubi. Yeah, this interrogation scene is pretty awkward.
Yeah.
They're the ravening lions of the soul and body of the world.
Yeah, it would be... I mean, even if you're from the 1800s, you would know to probably speak a little more plainly and not try to get all fancy.
You know, on Revelations, you can see some actual designs, concept sketches of, like, the monsters, including Nakir and that cocoon, the guy hanging in the cocoon upside down and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was a $4 million movie.
And yeah, it's $4 million.
In
Vancouver.
I thought it was shot in a few weeks. I'm not entirely sure how many.
Yeah, they don't have very many locations.
Clive said he wanted Munkar and Nakir to be two Lady Macbeths, and together they can be some real fun.
Hmm.
Well, I kind of disagree.
Well, and Lady Macbeth is guilt-ridden.
Yeah. Okay, so they're just leaving the station now?
So yeah.
The director, I think, his name is Joshua Butler. Is that the director, I think?
They just left the interrogation room.
So and Clive Barker said that he was someone who Joshua Butler was somebody who had advocates at Sci-Fi, and when I got in a room with him, he seemed just exactly the right choice. Excited by the idea of doing this.
9:38 a.m.
He just had one meeting with Clive, and Clive gave him the job.
Yeah,
I got that from Fangoria.
She's gonna dress up like she's Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah.
She should take a hammer out of that drawer and just smash this guy's skull in.
Actually, I was just thinking that exact same thing. He totally reminds me of one of those guys from Hellraiser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's just get on with it, okay?
And, you know, I just like to be safe. Whatever that
yeah.
one
Yeah.
So Doris Egan, who wrote the first script, she did a lot of TV work after this. I mean, and before as well. I mean, she was writing. This is like the fakest sex scene ever. I mean, my God, that's acting is horrible in this one. But Doris Egan, she wrote Dark Angel and she wrote Supernatural, I think. So, I guess I can see a little bit of that in this. Oh, we have a. Exorcist-like scene here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, who's the top? You or her? It's like her.
I don't know. I found some of this stuff to be quite entertaining.
Creepy, right?
Like, yeah.
It's just that the sex scene is just horrible.
Just, well, I mean, you gotta remember, well, for TV, I guess it could only...
Yeah.
It's just more played more for laughs.
Well, sure. when she was putting that putting together that dress in the other house, the extended version of it had nudity, but they had to take it out.
So Doris Egan had written several drafts of the teleplay for Saint Sinner, and I'm quoting from Hans Rodionoff interview. And she was also doing work on Smallville and Dark Angel. That gives us a little bit of context.
Dark Angel, is that the show with Jessica Alba?
Yeah, I love that show. That was a good show.
I saw it seemed like it was good for a little while, and then it got really weird with these people with animal costumes that looked really bad.
I think there was a few characters that were like that, maybe two or three, I guess, that I can remember.
I liked the first episode, and then I stopped watching it after like two or three of them.
Oh, I saw quite a few. So Joshua Butler, the director, said, we were trying to create, with Clive's assistance and his vision, a new breed of female demon for the screen that we haven't seen before. They are incredibly sexually charged, almost drug addicts in the sense that their drug is everything around them, the world. Their senses are heightened, and they have to suck the life out of every room they're in, every object they encounter, and every human that crosses their paths.
I will say, this is my second time I'm watching this. I'm really getting tired of that knife being, you know, turned.
Oh, yeah.
It's really getting quite annoying.
The knife would never be in front of a suspect in the police station. That would never happen. They would never put a knife in within hand reach of a suspect.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I'll cut it out with this knife.
Yeah.
Oh, my
God. It's making monkey noises.
And you guys said y'all saw the actual prop for this?
Yeah, it was like a mid-sized one because it keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah,
it wasn't that big though. I don't think. Maybe it was. Do you remember, Jose?
I think it was the baby that came out of the demon, right? That we saw.
We actually saw the thing at the end,
or was it this?
No, I thought it was this one. But yeah, I remember they said, "Yeah, look, isn't that cool?" And I think it was Christian was like, "That was the only good thing that came out of that movie."
I can see that.
It was like
Christopher Leonard's did the soundtrack for this, and I have that. And at the time, I think it was a limited edition of 300 copies.
The music, the score, that's cool. Which I thought some of the music was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. I thought that's kind of the best stuff that came out of this movie.
Yeah,
this is a part I didn't understand. He just casually walks out of here, and they don't.
Yeah,
it's just like
yeah.
Steve. I didn't get that.
Yeah.
So this stuff, like right here, is some of my favorite stuff in the movies. All this practical, you know,
looks effects. Almost like dark clowns or something to me.
Yeah.
And did you notice so which one is Munkar and which one is Nakir?
Munkar is the one that's drinking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nakir, she does something that it's not entirely clear, but she takes little keepsakes from the people she kills. Like she braids like a wedding ring into her hair.
Yeah.
And she's wearing like a shirt from another guy. So she does that.
Yeah.
Oh, nice little touch. I didn't notice that. You're right.
Also, the monk is left-handed.
Hmm.
Okay, through my second run through, this guy's acting is pretty not good.
Yeah.
The guy plays Tomas.
Yeah.
He's awkward.
Oh, I found like an interview from one of the special effects guys. He says he was talking about that shot where one of the characters twists her head around 360 degrees. And he says how they did it. We'll shoot her in two places, in front of a green screen and actually in the shot. In the shot, she'll be acting away, but she'll have a green hood on her head.
When we get
that footage into the computer, we'll remove the head by keying out the green. Then we'll shoot her again in front of a green screen and actually turn her around on a rig so that she turns 360 degrees.
Wow.
We'll just remove her body digitally, and we'll take her head and put it on the other shot. So that's how they did it. That reminds me of Cedar Point, the capital of roller coasters.
Yeah.
There's like 17 roller coasters in that park.
Oh, cool. Where is that at? Where's Cedar Point?
Ohio, I think.
Okay. Oh, I thought that was Seattle Center.
No, there's Cedar Fair Parks. There are several of those.
Oh. Huh.
Well, takes place in Seattle, right?
Right. No, I'm not saying that was Cedar Point. I'm saying that reminded me of it, yeah. No, Cedar Point is in Sandusky, Ohio. Yeah, that should be, like, the fact that the knife doesn't have any blood should be a dead giveaway that's not a murder weapon. Also, I've never seen anyone getting stabbed and turned into a giant cocoon. He woke up in an alien movie. Looks like an alien cocoon.
Yeah. Or wait. We're not... I think she's arguing with him at the police station still.
Ah, okay. I'm going to pause it again. Let me know when Munkar and Nakir are talking under the roller coaster.
Yeah, now he's just waking up in his cocoon right now.
Yeah.
And there's the roller coaster going by.
Yeah, you're right, Joe. That feels like the deleted scene from Alien with the Dallas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, she's got a hangover.
Yeah.
This is a scene that kind of reflects a little bit things that Clive Barker has introduced in other stories, like Jakobok and the other demon. Characters who act together, but at the same time they act like lovers.
Yeah.
Even though they're just supposed to be friends.
Yeah, yeah. And they get in and they fight each other and
were the seer kind in We World kind of like that? The sisters? Like, the Hag and Man McCullough.
Yeah.
The Kalata's sisters. Yeah.
They kind of like
that. The kind are the people from the few. But Mekalata and her sisters, yeah, they were kind of like that a little bit. They bickered a little bit.
This actress right here, I was reading where she did a ton of her own stunts.
Oh, cool.
Playing, what's the one in the car? Is that her name?
Nakir.
So Mary Mara played Munkar, and there was I found an interview about her role in this.
It's kind of funny. Go ahead.
No, it's just that she goes on about the work that she did and how she prepared for this, and it seems like when you read it, it's like the multi-level relationship was a difficult one to develop. And I'm like, I don't think that she prepared that much for this role. I mean, when you look at the movie, it's not clear that she put a lot of work into this. But, you know.
Yeah. And they're trying to kill each other. So, I think it's kind of interesting in here that, they just expected him to stay in that cocoon for all this time. Because it's a long time before they go, okay, now we're happy again. Let's go back and eat him. And he's long gone.
Well, not just that, but this whole part of making this this scene in a packed amusement park is incomprehensible to me, especially the time when they're going to kill a guy on the in the Ferris wheel.
Yeah, that's weird.
Oh, that's a great scene.
It's stupid.
I think that's a funny, great scene.
Nobody else notices what's going on there.
I don't. You're right. I mean, in that sense.
And you only get like 5 minutes on one of those things.
Yeah. And it's also, I mean, just think about it. They're dissecting this guy and killing him right in front of all these people. And it's one of those tropes where, oh, but you can only see what the camera sees. So it's like all the other people around that are not in the shot don't really matter.
Well, and every 30 seconds, they're going right in front of the ground and in front of everybody.
Yeah. I mean, probably everybody else was laughing.
Yeah.
It's like if the camera doesn't see it, it's not there.
Yeah.
It's like someone is going in a someone's going down a dark hallway and then the camera pans up and someone is standing right there in front of the protagonist. And you're like, what? He didn't see that person there when he was walking down the hallway? And it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, God. He looks like he was slimed.
He slimed me.
He slimed me.
Yeah, it looks...
It's nasty. Okay, now he's talking to his hand.
No, we haven't gotten to that part yet.
Okay.
Yeah, now he's talking to his hand.
Or he's telling me he's let, I've let you down or something like that.
Yeah.
Hear the dialogues of it.
I guess the Munkar and the Kier have these secretions and they kind of turn them into the cocoons, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like, Mommy, why is that guy covered in KY jelly?
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably what it really is.
She goes to this cop, he's about as reliable as Barney Fife.
Mm-hmm.
This one cop coming up. He just.
This reminds me of.
That line is kind of fake, too. This is supposed to be a family place.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to complain to the manager. What are you covered in, elephant cum? That is what Clive Barker called KY jelly on the set of Hellraiser.
Yeah.
And come.
Yeah.
I want to talk to the manager.
The FX people were saying that Clive kept screaming for Frank, bring more elephant cum, to put more like KY jelly on top of the makeup. Okay, this scene is whimsical and a little silly, but
I like her little, what she does with the seatbelt there.
Yeah. He's like, oh, kind of I'm going to show you
kind of like this kind of bondage. It's an in bondage kind of play thing.
They're about to kill a guy, but she'll honk the horn of that car just for the hell of it. Even he seems like a sleazy looking guy. He looks like the kind of guy who has dark secrets.
Yeah, they look like, people. Somebody on that show, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it was an NBC Dateline show called Catch a Predator.
Yeah.
That's what this guy looks like. A lot of the guys he get look like is those kind of in closet pedos.
Also, he takes forever to die. Oh, 301. That's really important.
Oh, we haven't gotten to that. Yeah, now 301.
In the unrated version, I bet that is a lot bloodier. Because in the one, this one is like they just smeared some blood on his neck.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, they never made an unrated version. It's really just there's deleted scenes that are separate.
Oh, just showing you how they originally shot it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Why is that guy holding a shotgun like that?
Because I think they're...
Oh, they're getting ready. Okay, yeah, I got
you.
Yeah.
Because they got the two women holed up in that record store.
Yeah. Which this record store looks totally fake.
Yeah, it was definitely.
I mean, it looks like they just threw it together really fast. There's not enough merchandise there.
I was trying to look at the covers. There's a Johnny Cash, I think, cover.
I love the lava.
I was like looking at that stuff like that.
Hey, we found a corpse. Suffered a little accidental damage.
Yeah.
Hey, there's a Culture Club cover over there.
Yeah, that's what I saw. I picked that out last night, too.
It's Boy George.
Yeah, Boy George.
That's a terrible line.
What was the line? I couldn't hear.
It isn't polite to interrupt people while they are eating.
Yeah, it's kind of a token line, people.
It's yeah.
That, there wasn't much about this movie in terms of, like, information about how it was made and stuff. I mean, I tried looking for scripts, and I just couldn't find anything.
It's a decent special effect there for the budget.
Yeah, it even regenerates her jacket as well.
Yeah, I know. I hate that.
Yeah.
That's one of my biggest pet peeves in movies where this stuff happens. That all, it's like, why are their clothes growing back?
Yeah, they could have. They didn't have to do that. That was dumb.
Who are you calling hateful wench? Is she holding the Saint Nicodemus dagger?
Yeah. Yeah, because she still had it at the police station, I guess.
Okay, cool. I wonder if this movie exists in high definition. Maybe on iTunes or something like that?
Yeah, I don't know. I just have DVD.
Right.
Probably as high definition you'll probably ever find it. I don't think that's going to hit Blu-ray anytime soon.
So we had a Mexican standoff here where each one has a hostage, and somehow the bad guys end up just walking out.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't get that either. I guess that's...
Yeah.
Why didn't the cops see him? I guess, well, he was...
This guy gets...
That's a good point. Because it seems like there were a lot of cops outside the store, so
yeah,
nobody
the cops,
stopped them. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, the cops.
Yeah, what happens when you handcuff them?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, the comic book was far better than this. Even being a little confusing, I think that...
It sounded better.
It was confusing.
The story of Philip Fetter, a boy possessed by a demon, and then the angel perusing it. I thought that looked cool. They did a lot of, like, groundbreaking stuff in the comic books where they had special effects in, like, the way they printed out the comic where a character was always, like, a little bit out of phase with the ink that was coloring his outline, so it looked like he was kind of a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was cool. You know.
I'll have to get the comics. Maybe if they're on eBay.
Yeah.
There's some cool characters. Like Kanto Kanto, the interdimensional acrobat. There was a giant bull baby. And there were some powers that they could evolve or de-evolve like a living creature.
Oh, cool.
And there were only 9 issues of Saint Sinner.
So they never finished it.
No, not exactly. I mean, I think the artists of all those Razorline comics knew when it was over, so they tried.
Oh,
they tried to, and some of them, a couple of them, I think, even got a final issue like a year later where they could finish.
Yeah, some of the Razorline titles had that Unleashed special.
Yeah. Ecto Kid Unleashed and Hyperkind Unleashed, right?
They tried to make them like open ended.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, maybe one day we'll get back to the adventures of these amazing characters.
But no.
No. Well, back then, Marvel was publishing a lot of stuff, and then they were also facing a technical bankruptcy a couple of years after that. So they didn't really have a lot of money.
I remember seeing the Razorline comics at a store I used to go to when they were first released, the very first week, because it was I was going to see Jason Goes to Hell that night. Mm. We went to the comic book store before we went to see the movie. Is and I saw the first issue of Saint. What's that?
Is that the one with Paul Rudd?
No, that's a Halloween movie, I think. That's a
Halloween right. Never mind. Okay, you're talking about
Jason Goes to Hell is the one where it has the ending where Freddy's glove comes up and grabs his mask.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't really have Jason in it.
So Patrick Tatopoulos, who I think was one of the producers, he said, it wasn't really a big budget, but we didn't go into the project saying, we're treating this as TV. The producer, Oscar Costa, was a director on Special Unit 2, so he brought me on board, and then meeting Clive Barker was great. On the first day we found out, we got the job. Clive came to the shop and brought a few drawings that he had done, so we played with those concepts and discussed them for a few hours. And
I like Patrick Tatopoulos. He'd done a lot of great work. He directed Underworld 3, Rise of the Lycans. I think he was going to work on
Here now they're finally checking on him in the cocoon. He's been to the police station. He's in a house. Mm-hmm. It's like an hour later.
Yeah.
The part I'm watching, she's giving him some clothes.
That's where we're at.
That's where we're at too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Patrick Tatopoulos mentions those drawings, but then he also says Clive had a very strong idea of what he wanted to see. Of course, Clive is an accomplished artist, and he had a sketch for a creature, but that ended up looking very different from the sketch.
Did she teach him how to operate the shower?
I guess it's not rocket science.
Yeah.
You mean if I twist this way, the water will come out warm?
Wow. Yeah, they wanted to skip all that fish out of water stuff.
But you know, you raise a good point because, I mean, I'm not from the 1800s, and once I went to Las Vegas, this fancy suite, and I did not know how to operate the shower faucet because it was so weird. It was
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Weird. That's kind of...
I've seen that.
You'll have to tell us about that story one day in Messenger.
It's kind of embarrassing.
Oh.
It took me like a couple of minutes, but I figured it out. All right, he looks even more modern now. He looks just like a dude.
Yeah.
This film was filmed in Canada. It feels like X-Files in some of the way with those trees in the forest.
Yeah, and the smoking man.
Yeah. It does. They shot a lot of stuff up in Canada because it would save them money, and I think they still do. I mean.
Tax breaks.
So is this in Vancouver then?
Yeah, it's Vancouver.
The critical reception for this movie wasn't very good.
I didn't look that up. What was the overall? I know an internet movie database had a very low score. I think I can't remember that.
I'm not going to bother reading any of the reviews because they're really bad.
I found this to be just a fun, I guess it would call it guilty pleasure or something. I just found some kind of fun.
Mm.
Tapped into this silly kind of, you know, these two, I mean, really what did it for me was these two characters here. I enjoyed them.
They look like cartoons in this scene where Nakir is behind the cop and she's being all like creepy, like creeping up on him and like raising her arms and stuff.
Yeah.
It's
oh, here we go. Oh. There's your favorite scene.
Oh, God. This is so stupid.
This is so crazy.
What? The people behind them can't see what they're doing?
No. Yeah, that's right. They're when they're coming up right behind them on the top and on the bottom.
The actress that's sucking out the life force. Look at her. She almost looks at the camera and starts laughing.
And the kids behind them, there are kids behind them, too. See, look at that. They should be looking straight at him.
And like you said, it's very anticlimactic to ride a Ferris wheel. I've ridden two Ferris wheels, and I was like, this isn't that fun at all.
Yeah.
Because you have to sit, and then you have to wait until they start rolling it up, and then they roll up once or twice, and then they stop a little bit, and then they bring it down. That's it. You're done.
Yeah. So this scene, originally, they were all goopy. Originally, they were really clean and didn't look like they do. Mm-hmm. Oh, it actually, yeah, there was an extended dialogue. So that must be what it is. They just cut it short. So you couldn't see their faces.
Why did his voice change?
I don't know.
It was deeper there, like their voice or something.
He's getting to know the internet.
Yeah.
Brother Thomas. Thomas Alcala. That's a weird name.
Yeah.
I wonder if they got that name from some other, like, historical character. Sometimes they would do that.
Yeah.
It's such an age of wonders.
So they're looking up here, that part, looking up the missionary.
Monastery.
The monastery.
This is another weird part for me because it kind of stalls the movie, this whole bit here where they go to the monastery and they're...
And there's like...
really brings the movie to a halt.
There's also a weird sexual tension between the two of them that they're like, oh, we can't because I'm a monk and I'm supposed to be a saint.
Well, it's not like he doesn't talk about God all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
God has a purpose for you. And
they have this awkward almost kiss where they... then they don't.
Hmm. I think it's for the best, really.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't kiss.
Yeah, but it's... They didn't have to have the tension at all. They could have just left it out. I mean, they don't have to be attracted to each other.
Sure. So this guy apparently has no life, so he's still working?
Yeah, when everybody else is gone.
8 p.m.
Apparently,
maybe he just types really slowly.
Hans Rodionov, in an interview once, explained a little more about Munkar and Nikir. He said Saint Nicodemus crafted a mystical orb to contain the demons and shipped it off to the repository, where some such things were kept in order to protect the world at large. So apparently, that was Saint Nicodemus who trapped him there. The big question in this movie, according to the writer, is will Thomas become a saint or is he too much of a sinner? Well, I haven't seen this guy sin at all.
Yeah.
No, he hasn't done anything.
Except right at the beginning.
Yeah.
But yeah, he feels too guilty about what happened to his brother. He would never... She's got a balloon in her hair.
Took that from the... It's the carnival.
Yeah.
Oh, and he also, Hans Rodionov also went on to explain, fans of the Saint Sinner comic will quickly realize the storyline is nothing like the Marvel epic Razorline comic. But while Saint Sinner, the movie, isn't intended to be an adaptation of those comics, it does share the same themes. And then he says, the heart that beats in this movie is the same heart that was beating in the comic books. Bullshit.
What you described to me was not
the only thing that's similar is a character that's sort of battling between, you know, good and evil within himself, but it's not, but that's in a lot of movies that you can't really say that that's, you know, that's even anything that they have in common.
Yeah, and Patrick Tatopoulos was the movie monster creator. He designed Sony's Godzilla.
Oh, yeah, right, because the main character of that Godzilla was named after him. Because Matthew Broderick's character's name was Tatopoulos.
Oh, really? Okay.
And everybody kept mispronouncing it all the time.
And the Sony's Godzilla ended up being called Jira, right? Or Zilla.
That's just what they called it in Japan.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to accept that it was Godzilla.
He also worked on Pitch Black.
So. I like Pitch Black.
Oh, I love... Yeah, Pitch Black is a great film.
Have you seen the new Riddick movie? It's like almost like a remake of Pitch Black.
What's the one with Dave Bautista?
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah,
I have one of those IMAX prints that you can get from the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
It's Riddick and that crazy space dog.
Really cool. Yeah.
yeah, here's a little bit of like that sexual tension where he's like looking at her sleep.
Yeah.
Oh, and regarding being a TV movie, also they said that the final cut of the movie was cable friendly. While a surprising amount of gore passed the network censors, a much greater degree of sensual content was cut.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you can have all kinds of monsters doing all kinds of horrible things to people, but don't show a nipple, Rodionov quipped.
Yeah. Well, he should have known that going in.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I mean...
There's a... In this scene where she's... it turns out to be the two... he's dreaming about her and then... Visions the two sisters.
Yeah.
The one of them looks completely nude, then it goes to a shot of her having something on, then it looks like she's nude again.
Oh, kind
yeah.
of. Just right there, she looks nude, then.
This is also weird because it's like, what is it, a dream? Or is it something psychic that they're sending him?
I think it's meant to be a symbolic. Moment where he's fighting his temptation.
Hmm.
I don't know. Or maybe it's a dream.
Yeah.
They did make them look dirtier and dirtier as the movie
goes. Yeah.
Yeah. Their voices sound like people that have bad smokers
yeah.
for a long time.
Hans Rodionoff also wrote Lost Boys, The Thirst.
There's another 7:59 a.m. Why not 8 o'clock?
Yeah, no, that's kind of... Yeah, you're right. Those are redundant and kind of silly.
Like, this part of the movie is just very slow. I mean, there's really nothing going on.
Yeah.
And everybody has these long, plastic, leathery-looking jackets in the 90s. Like a leather trench coat or something.
Yeah.
That's a staple of the 90s. I like the prop of the knife. It looks cool. Did you guys notice that the blade has these, like, veins going through it?
Uh-uh. Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
When the cop was spinning it
earlier. The lighting in this is really weird.
It's all blued out.
Yeah.
It's a filter.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I think it's funny seeing that guy like that. I don't know. I've wanted to see that guy die since the beginning of the movie.
And for some of the people out there who like Tortured Souls, Hans Rodionoff also worked on the script for Tortured Souls that never got made. Oh, man, this is so hokey.
And I'm annoyed by that effect because you're right, I don't like that
yeah.
her clothes get fixed as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and her clothes are all ripped up to start with. And, you know, why is it now that she's healing them? Why doesn't she make them something else then?
What I want to know is how did Munkar and Nikir get the detective to lead them there while he's a giant pile of cocoon?
Yeah. He's got a hand truck. Them? Yeah, they had a dolly.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, they're looking really nasty, though. As far as demons go, their skin.
This is too long of a time in between, like, when he's asking her to kill him and when she actually does it. It's really awkward. Like, why didn't Munkar figure it out?
I keep wondering, is it really made out of a 25-page treatment by Clive, or was it just a script from Doris Egan that got repurposed into this? I really wish I knew more about that. There's
yeah.
not a lot... Of knowledge about this, except for some interviews.
I think the truth is probably somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. You know, Hans Rodionoff says that he was just brought in when they already had a greenlit draft from Doris Egan, and they already hired the director. So
Yeah.
I don't know if Clive was present for that first part. I guess he might have been. $4 million.
Yeah, it's $4 million. I think is still a pretty good amount of money.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it depends on who your actors are and how much they cost, but.
So they're finally going to see that saint that they were looking around the internet a while ago.
Yeah, she's that actress is terrible.
Yeah,
she's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's gone to a better place. Like the dialogue they have in the car is very, very generic.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like an actual conversation two people would have.
No.
It's very contrived. But, you know, this is Fundraiser 3, Hell on Earth.
Yeah.
Torturing ourselves for you guys. Although, it's true, I have it in my collection. I mean, I'm not going to say... I mean, there's plenty of movies out there who are much worse than this.
Yeah.
It's got Clive Barker's name. It's got some interesting things.
It's just a little disappointing is all. I don't think that it's terrible either.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a terrible movie.
Yeah.
It's not Rawhead Rex or Underworld.
Yeah. I mean, technically it's far superior to those movies.
Yeah.
Except for the blue filter.
Yeah, why are they still doing that?
I wish they had
something to do with the day where they shot the film. That's when a lot of movies at night, they're trying to show that they've shot night for day.
Yeah, but now it's supposed to be morning time.
I guess it's because they have the darkness hanging over their heads.
Yeah.
It's the way to cheat.
Yeah. I don't like it. I think it's
very low budget films.
Yeah, and look how blown out the sky is in the windshield there because they did that.
Yeah, it does draw attention to to itself.
Oh, and one of the interviews that Clive did for the old Lost Souls website, this is February 2002. I think it's a few months before this movie got released.
There's a long extended scene of them torturing that guy and sucking out of a straw out of the back of his neck. They decided that character wasn't important enough and nobody's really going to care what happens to him, so they took it out.
I'm curious about seeing those scenes now.
Yeah.
This interview from 2002, Clive was talking to people on the internet, and someone asked, any news on the Nightbreed Special Edition DVD? This was like 14 years ago.
Yeah.
And he says, I need to get another deal done first. As soon as that happens, I'm going to say, all right, where's my special edition?
Yeah.
I just get fuzzy when I think about that the director's cut exists now.
I asked him about that at the Sacrament signing in like 95 or 96.
And so when he did this interview, the movie had been greenlit 2 days ago for the Sci-Fi Channel.
Mm.
And then someone said, are you writing the script for that? And he says, no, it's already been written. So, and he also had a treatment for Ecto Kid that was 15,000 words.
Yeah.
I wonder what happened with that.
Yeah, they talked about that in the letter section of the comics that they were all excited about there being an Ecto. Don't worry, even though the comic is going away, there's still lots of stuff going on with Ecto Kid.
Yeah.
And it's like none of it worked out. They were going to do, like, a cartoon or something, too.
Hmm. Oh, my gosh. Phil and Sarah were in this old interview. They put in a question. This is from Phil and Sarah from England. Were you disappointed or delighted
that you
found it necessary to cover Moribundi at this month's Toy Fair? Huh.
Wow. That's cool.
Okay, so they're finally meeting that person.
Yeah, they're drawing a lot of attention to the fact that this monastery looks almost exactly the same as it did in the 1800s.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was supposed to be the same monastery.
It is.
Oh, okay, got it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think they by going into the flashback in this room, it's like, "Oh yeah, it looks exactly the same because
it is the same."
Yeah, exactly.
It was shot at the same time.
Yeah.
It's just one of them is kind of orangey looking. The other is like bluish.
They take the light fixtures off the walls and turn them into candles. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a creepy little thing with the nun there, but
yeah, with her head.
Yeah.
She's like a bird.
Yeah.
That's Moonkar, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, without any makeup on. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't notice that. You're right.
Leading her into the reliquary.
I thought it was just another kind of a nun or something that they...
Oh, yeah.
Into the repository.
It's kind of... It's actually, if you think about it too hard, though, it's like, would she really have taken the time to dress up like a nun?
Yeah.
She it's that magic jacket she's got that we can read. It can morph into other clothes.
Yeah.
Let's just put it at that.
Yeah.
It looks like the repository doesn't even have a
there's clothes. A wheelchair right there.
Yeah.
It must be some kind of magical wheelchair.
It's the wheelchair from Dream Warriors.
Yeah. The Wizard Master.
Yeah.
That's what
or Silver Bullet.
Yeah, Silver Bullet.
The good part about this third act is that it's the third act.
Well, I think the reliquary, whatever this location is kind of cool. They didn't really do a good job of... I guess it's just storage now for the church, right? There's nothing good in there.
They're in the suppository. Oh, sorry, repository. I guess the succubi should have practiced safe sex.
Yeah.
It's pretty nasty. It's a pretty nasty sex shot. Nasty it's really moment.
And there, it seems almost like you can. He didn't even need to go back in time after them because they're going to pretty much kill themselves.
Yeah, they start fighting each other. And
yeah, they fight each other. She gets pregnant, and then you know she should have known that would have killed her.
God, I mean. Don't even get me started with that fight and that last scene that we're going to see later. But
yeah,
everything is telegraphed like miles away.
Yeah.
And everything is like slowed down, but it's not actual slow motion. It's just that they're acting really slow.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I like the fact that they made the creature when it's coming out of her belly.
Yeah.
They change her makeup to look like she's getting the life sucked out of her.
Yeah.
Her face gets all, like, wrinkled and stuff. That's cool.
Kind of reminds me of Alien.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So one thing I don't like here is they imply that these... Because at the beginning of the movie, they said that their creature's older than man. But then later on, she's going to make her into another succubus. So, like, wait a minute. Are they their own creatures, or can they just get converted from humans?
Don't think too hard about it.
I know.
But that's a good catch. I think I thought about that, too, when I saw the movie, and I was like,
This is a, well, you call it a leave your brain at the door type movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, looking up the word succubus on the internet made me discover a website called Succupedia, Encyclopedia of Succubus Love.
Nice.
It's weird. She says, you've surpassed me and moved on to the next phase, and I envy you. It's like, what is the phase? Getting killed by your baby? That's not a phase.
I didn't get that. You're right. Yeah.
Or is she being reborn in that thing?
Maybe so. It doesn't go into any kind of...
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question. It's a big plot hole. Maybe in the commentary for Clive and them, they would explain it. Maybe listen to that commentary wouldn't be a bad idea if I buy my own copy. See what they have to say.
Maybe she would just make a giant cocoon and turn into a giant bug as well.
Ugh. So it sort of crunched onto her face, but then later on you see her face and there's nothing, no damage on it.
Looks like an evil dead demon.
Yeah.
Well, the actual succubi, if you look at the mythology, it does say that, you know, the Malus Maleficarum, which is mentioned in, like, the Books of the Damned and Hellraiser, that book is from 1486, and it says that a succubus collects semen from the men she seduces. And the incubi, or male demons, then use that semen to impregnate human females. So they run kind of like a sperm bank.
Yeah. So, and here's Rob's favorite actress.
God, this is horrible. Lines are delivered like, you know.
It's like, you know, I'm in this movie, but I'm not really
Yeah. She's like, what?
Oh,
wait.
There it is. She's making that weird cocoon with her mouth.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I wish they gave us a closer look at that.
Yeah. They probably should have shown that in the beginning of the movie instead of at the end.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not a saint.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I guess that makes me the saint then.
Yeah. Yeah, and her acting is so stiff and wooden, you think that there's something wrong, like she's actually somehow aligned with Munkar and Nakir.
I know, yeah, it makes her feel kind of...
Yeah.
You kind of feel a little...
Someone explain to me...
unnerved. Go ahead. No, I was just basically agreeing with Ryan.
Someone explain to me why Thomas Alcala says goodbye to the lady, and then he just goes straight into the repository. How did he know that... the detective was there.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe he was just looking for the wheel. Yeah.
Did he spin the knife?
No.
No, I don't think so.
I guess it was just fate. Let's just chalk it up to fate.
They give him a lot of time to cut open the cocoon right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is taking a little time. Just hold on. I'll fight you guys in a minute. Just wait your turn, please. And that's another thing that demon baby thing
doesn't do anything at all.
Yeah, and they don't. As far as I know, they don't even kill it. Right? They just throw it into a corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all. You're right. They don't do anything.
Yeah.
I can imagine like a nun going in there to clean that and be like, "Holy crap, that's a big roach." Yeah. I'm gonna call that exterminator from Arachnophobia.
John Goodman's character.
Yeah, I love that guy.
He's awesome.
Also, that's a really bad knife fight.
Yeah, they didn't really have a good choreographer on this movie.
Yeah, that's important. I mean, otherwise you're just going to have someone wave a knife in front of someone else.
Yeah. So what happened? Where he was it his face got spat on?
Yeah, she spat on his face and poisoned him.
Oh, I thought the little demon creature did that. So she did that.
Yeah.
And it's Munkar and Nakir like choking the heck out of each other. It's like, what are you guys doing?
That's the last we see of the filthy brood.
Yeah. And then they just keep choking each other like a cartoon, and they go on for like a couple of minutes.
Yeah, and why? Why even? She did. All she had to do was step away. There's nothing that Nakir could do to her.
It's a very contrived movie, but it's a TV movie.
Yeah,
you know? It's one of those things where you just
you
play it if it's playing, and it's like okay. I don't know how many times this movie has been on TV ever since it was first released.
Good question. I never watched the Sci-Fi Channel.
Oh,
I don't
think it has really. I usually try to watch the Sci-Fi Channel and see what's on there just to see what movies they
I watch
they
it show. All the time.
I've not seen.
Sometimes I've seen some of their movies, but not, you know, I don't have cable, so, like, I've seen Sharktopus and Sharknado.
Yeah.
Let me know when the Brother Alcala starts running with the knife.
He's doing it right now.
Okay. Yeah, see, like, this part, he just runs, and she looks and sees him, and he keeps on running, and she keeps looking at him.
She gets out of the way.
And again, if the camera isn't focusing on it, it doesn't happen. And then we don't see where the other demon went.
And presumably they've had this happen before. So why would she jump on the knife again?
On the other hand, I do like the fact that that knife is a double-edged knife.
That part is cool. But there's no way she would fall for that a second time.
Yeah. No.
I'm going to jump. she could have snuck up behind them and slashed at their backs or something instead.
It was the will of God.
Yeah.
God always saves the day.
Yeah.
I wonder who has that orb right now.
That's a good question.
It's pretty cool.
That'd be awesome if she runs up and grabs it. They're like, well, wait, no, you're not supposed to. Oh,
jeez.
I should have told you what happened to my brother. I think he uses the knife to kind of scoop it in there.
Oh, speaking of saints, the other day I was listening to NPR, and I heard this article that mentioned that in the Vatican, there are some people who are complaining that people who are being sainted, it's easier to get sainted if you have rich friends because it costs a lot of money to do the whole investigation process.
Oh, to get canonized?
Yeah. And so they were saying that that's unfair to people who have had big positions in the church and stuff because they will become sainted more quickly than some monk in South America.
Hmm.
So he's kind of dying because he got spat on with poison.
Yeah.
It's in his blood, I guess. I take it.
You need to take him to a hospital. No, better idea. Just throw him in the Wheel of Time. It's not our problem anymore.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, she said, I have a better idea. How would she even know that that was a Wheel of Time?
So here's that woman's wooden acting again.
Yeah.
Come on, bring him inside.
That is not going to heal him.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they could have healed him and then brought him to the Wheel of Time.
Nah, that would be too long.
I've got a better idea. Let him die.
And she says, years ago, the Archbishop sent someone to take all the artifacts.
Yeah.
This chain-smoking guy was there and he said, nah, leave this one here.
Yeah. She sort of stares right into the camera, doesn't she?
She speaks in a very matter-of-fact way.
Yeah.
It's too matter-of-fact.
Yeah.
See you, Thomas. Y'all have a good day now.
Yeah.
Now it comes off.
He's poisoned and dying, but they're still going to have a little romantic conversation before he goes into the
Yeah, world. It's really awkward.
I'm just glad they didn't kiss.
He's 2 minutes away from being dead.
Yeah.
His grave's already outside. He doesn't even know it.
Yeah.
It might have been, for all we know.
Oh, she kisses the part of his face that's got blisters all over it.
Here it goes. A good movie is worth watching again. Let's rewind the movie. Actually, I see scenes where he's talking to her in the car and stuff. They are rewinding the movie.
Oh, yeah. Right now.
It's the light flashing over his eyes.
He's got such a bad actor that he can't even sell dying well.
Yeah. Well, he's not. I mean, he's awesome compared to the nun lady.
Yeah, oh yeah. He's Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
I think that abbot and the other two monks were just standing guard there this whole time, waiting for him to return.
Well, it could have been only 30 seconds.
Yeah, for all we know. Except it's
That was nice. When he's dying here, he's kind of sits. He's laying on the ground just like he was when he...
At the beginning of the movie. Yeah, and at the beginning he was a sinner, and now he's a saint.
He died from a horrible case of face herpes.
And he says, Don't grab that ball with your hands.
Yeah, I know. What the? That's on the ground?
Yeah. It just dumped out of his bag when he fell down.
I just wish this woman would leave the frickin' movie.
She can't help.
Wait, I forgot. Are they going to show, Thomas Alcala's grave here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, coming up here in a second. But nobody notices it. It might have been better if she'd said, hey, I want to show you something.
A saint does not know that he is so.
Yeah.
And
we're almost there. We haven't gotten to the grave yet. There it is. A saint does not know that he is so.
Well, that's it.
Now, does he, it kind of does this thing where he opens his eyes. Now, is he supposed to be in a heaven there, or is it kind of a recall, like it's going to start over again?
I don't know.
I kind of thought it was like this symbolic thing of him waking up in heaven.
Maybe, yeah. Okay. His heaven is just like what his life was like before.
So that was a similar shot to the beginning of the movie, wasn't it?
I thought it was like probably filmed right at the same time.
Welcome to heaven. You got a bunch of wenches here showing their boobs off, washing clothes by the river.
Yeah.
Well, I think this was just, I had a fun time with it. It's mainly for the two demons. And
yeah.
It's not great.
No.
Okay.
No, but
I just had fun.
It's a lot more enjoyable than Dread.
Oh, God. Is that, what's next, too? It's better than The Plague.
Is that, no, that's not next.
Okay.
I don't think. I think we're doing another Hellraiser movie.
We're finishing up the Hellraiser.
We're doing Hellworld, and then we've got The Plague, and then we've got Revelations.
Okay.
Oh, God, we're going to watch that one again.
Okay. I
didn't even finish The Plague, man. The Plague was bad.
I'm in the same boat as you, Rob. I don't think I've ever actually finished watching the movie.
Yeah. I bought it just specifically for this, for the Hell on Earth fundraiser.
Yeah.
I just could not finish it. I think it started off pretty cool, but then, I don't know, something happened.
It gets really, really boring.
Okay, well, that's Saint Sinner.
Yeah.
So next up, another Hellraiser.
I think it's Hellworld.
Okay.
So some might argue that it's the worst Hellraiser movie of them all. I think that the worst is still yet to come. But
to me, the worst is probably still Hellraiser Inferno. At least
even
Rickson.
Even worse than Revelations.
Yeah, I kind of don't even think of Revelations as an actual real Hellraiser movie.
or a real movie at all.
Yeah, just a real movie at all.
Yeah.
I catch myself still saying, oh, yeah, there's 8 Hellraiser movies.
And yeah. Like,
no, wait, there's 9. Oh, wait, now there's 10. I just wish that they did a good one.
Yeah.
So let's see. Let's see what happens with Judgment. Rob, you've been posting a lot of cool stories about it. So, hey, let's give it a shot. Who knows? I mean, nowhere else to go but up.
Yeah.
You would think so. Yeah, didn't David said something about that on – somebody said that on Facebook, and he was like, no, they already hit bedrock with that, and now they're digging – now they're jackhammering into the bedrock.
I didn't see that comment.
Yeah.
It's just like saying how Gary Tunicliffe was kissing a lot of dimension butt, but he's like, the proof has got to be in the pudding.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you to all the Kickstarter backers and to Jordy Callender and
Don
Bertram. It was a pleasure to have him on the podcast. So thanks for joining us and listening to this commentary track, guys. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yep.
Yeah, hope you enjoy it. And
for the 5 people who have a DVD of this movie.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Catch you later.
Bye-bye.
Right,
bye. Have a good day. Bye.
You too.
The Clive Barker Podcast, or BarkerCast, is an independent editorial fan site and podcast that is not affiliated with or under contract by Clive Barker or Seraphim Films. This podcast and site are a labor of love by the fans for the fans. News, features, and show notes for this episode can be found at www.clivebarkercast.com. Go to iTunes and please leave us a review. Reviews really help us get the word out about Clive Barker. You can also find us on Podomatic, Xbox Music Store, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, DoubleTwist, BlackBerry, and PocketCast. We have a Facebook page, so come on and like our Facebook page and join the Occupy Media group for lots of discussion about Nightbreed and other Clive Barker stuff. On Twitter, we're at BarkerCast and at Occupy Midian. Opening theme by Mark Buckle.